tonight, huh? Drummer? Come on, you.
Well, hi, diddly ho, neighborinos. Didn't I say I was going to stop doing that? Is that Tool Time? Is that what that is? Or what?
No, it's like a mixture of Tool Time and also Ned Flanders.
Oh, yeah, I'm nothing like Ned Flanders. I am like the dude in the hat behind the fence. I wear plaid a lot.
Yes.
I do have a hat. My hat's a Chief's hat. That's fine. Hey, folks, you're listening to the Drunken UX Podcast. This is episode number 50. We're going to be talking about UI and UX design tools, prototyping tools, wireframing tools, high fidelity wireframing tools, mock-up tools, whatever you want to call them. That's what we're going to be going over. I am your host, Michael Feenan.
I'm your other host, Aaron Hill. How you doing, Michael?
I am doing quite well this evening. And you know who else is doing well this evening? Our kind folks over at NewCloud. Run by newcloud.com/drunkenUX. Go check them out if you're looking for any kind of interactive mapping solutions for whether you got a college campus, a hospital, a city, whatever the case may be. They can help you out over there with illustration services, map systems, whatever.
And while you're checking that out, you can check us out on Twitter and Facebook.com/DrunkenUX and Instagram.com/DrunkenUX podcast. And also on DrunkenUX.com/Slack. Come check.
I'm about 3% worried with how much you're slurring already. So
it's a lot of S's.
It is. It's not so many S's. What are you drinking tonight, Aaron?
Some Lagavulin 16.
No, you're not. Are you?
I really am. Oh, I. Yeah. I am.
Be damned.
I'll send you a picture.
No, that's the same thing I'm drinking tonight.
Nice.
We were a matched pair and we didn't even plan it that way. No, it's nice, isn't it?
It's perfect for episode 50.
The way Nick Offerman describes it is, you know, it's like drinking a campfire.
Yeah, actually, that's. Yeah.
Very robust. It's definitely like, don't start there. If you're thinking about drinking scotch and you're getting started, don't start with Lagavulin.
I've heard it described as burnt band-aids.
I don't know that I would go there with.
Or smoky band-aids.
Ardbeg? Yeah. Lafroig? Yeah. Because they've got a higher iodine content, and that's where you kind of get that, that flavor that you sort of associate with a medicinal quality. Lagavulin has a much lower level of that, so it tastes significantly better, at least to me, because I don't like that flavor. I don't like the medicine-y flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Scotch advice from your friend, Michael Feenan. Real fast, I want to give a shout-out to Joel Goodman. If you don't remember Joel, he was a guest of ours on episode number 20 when we were talking about starting up like small web shops and how to run a tiny business for web developers. They just put out an article over at his site at bravery.blog.
Mm.
The title of it's called Design Research in Higher Ed. Yeah, you should be doing that. So I just wanted to throw it out there, tell folks, go check that out. It's definitely worth a read, especially, you know, we just had episode 42. We were talking about website redesigns and some of the challenges that come with that and the process that goes into it.
Plus Joel's good people.
Joel's good people. He's done a lot of work in this space. We talk a lot about having goals before tools. But this extends that to say, you know, you should research before you develop your goals. Or I think his phrase was data before goals. It's just about understanding that process before you just jump into work and getting into things like why you see in RFPs and in proposals this section for discovery. You know, discovery is research. You know, it's somebody coming in and taking the time to learn the things that you aren't learning. So there's a lot. Whether you run a company or work at a company or you're helping inform a process that you can do to make sure that the work that you perform is successful if you get into that research early and use that as the foundation for whether it's the things you want to change, you know, the work that you want to get done, the goals that you want to set. So go run by the Bravery blog. It's bravery.blog. There'll be a link in our show notes as well if you want to hunt it down that way or check us out on Twitter, like Aaron was saying. You'll be able to pick up that link there. Okay, so this evening we are talking UI UX design tools. And so we wanted to bring in somebody who could help us out with that and talk, you know, intelligently about some of the differences and some of the nuance behind them. I've used a few. Aaron pretends like he has used some of them. So
I look, whenever I see Adobe XD, I always see XD as like the super big smiley emoticon. I can't not see it. That was
intentional on their part. You know, that's called marketing.
It's gotta be.
So joining us this evening is a product designer from HubSpot. I'm sure they have many of those, quite frankly. He's the creative director at Vinylize Design Company, Frank Romeu. Frank, how you doing, man?
Not too bad. How are you guys doing today?
Great.
I'm very cold. We got some snow yesterday. It was about 16 when I looked earlier. I got the fireplace going. Whoa. I got my Lagavulin. Man, I'm set.
Was it the first snow over there?
Yeah, here. Yeah, in fact, this is super cold for us right now. Like,
it's 17 here. I didn't realize it was that cold. We had snow Wednesday. I think we got a dusting. I got a refresh of it last night. We got about 2 inches outside.
Interesting. We just had our first dusting as we speak over here in the Boston area.
Oh, excellent.
Kansas has weird weather. That's all I can say. It was 72 on Sunday, and then it dropped down to 16 yesterday. So
lovely.
Yeah, that's Kansas weather. Okay, so talking UI UX design tools. Now, first and foremost, I want to say it because I'm not going to say UI UX every time I go to use this phrase throughout this episode.
Unique New York.
It's a case of these things, and we're going to talk about this. That phrase tends to get lumped in together. There are reasons that happens. No, they aren't the same thing. UI is a distinct area. UX is a distinct area. But the tools that we're going to be talking about do offer a lot of resources and features that facilitate one and or both of these in different combinations. And as a result, they tend to get used by teams that spread across those disciplines. So
my favorite like discerning image of the two is like when you have a picture of like a sidewalk, like with cement, you know, cement tile sidewalk. And then there's like a passion path that goes through the grass on a diagonal. And so UI is like the sidewalk, and then UX is the little passion path that goes off. It's not like this most strictest perfect definition, but it's like one way to kind of think about maybe a little bit of the difference.
I mean, that kind of also reminds me of, and I don't know, you know, it's subject to debate, but there's another kind of like meme on the internet about UI design is your standard like Heinz glass ketchup bottle where the top is just like facing upward. But UX is like the more practical plastic one where it's kind of like upside down, so to speak, and the nozzle's on the bottom because nobody likes to have to like shake your ketchup bottle or anything like that. And they think of the experience of having like, you know, having your ketchup like ready to go at a moment's squeeze.
And I for some reason, I don't know why I do this to myself. I just Googled UI versus UX design in Google's image search. And I found what you literally were just describing, Frank. Except that the upside down plastic ketchup bottle is basically pooping ketchup onto the tabletop. So I am 100% putting that in the show notes now.
Valuable content. Go for it.
Holy macaroni grill. Okay, so I just wanted to kind of caveat that, though, because I don't want somebody yelling like, oh, you used UI wrong. I know it's just going to be a shortcut for the sake of the episode.
It's nuanced. The difference is
it's definitely nuanced. And I think in this particular case, there's enough of an overlap that it can be forgiven to an extent. When we talk about UI UX design tools, what are we talking about? Over the last, I don't know, would you say probably...
Five?
You think it's 10. Even 5 years? I was going to say like 3 or 4.
Oh, yeah, I could see
five-ish.
That.
Five-ish. Yeah, 3 to 5.
Getting towards five. You started...
I remember using Balsamic about 5 or 6 years ago, but I don't know how new it was.
I'm going to talk about that in a second. You're going to join me. we'll round it up then. We'll say 5 years. These tools have started to enter the common lexicon for pretty much any designer anywhere at this point. And these are tools like Envision or Sketch, which are relatively new tools. Envision launched in 2011. Sketch launched right before that in 2010.
Envision's cool. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's 2019. So when we say, oh, it's been 5 years, these tools have been out longer than that. Balsamic came out in 2008. So it's been out for 11 years, and we've got a couple newer options now that folks are looking at, like, and these are tools like Figma or Adobe XD.
Balsamic was written in Adobe Air, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. That's a throwback right there.
I haven't thought about that in a long time. Yeah, Adobe Air, that was going to be the next big app framework for desktops.
If I remember correctly there, Adobe Air is basically self-contained Flash, isn't it?
It's something along those lines, yeah. They were trying to containerize Flash to make it safe. Like, right. I think it was that last dying gasp of Flash to be like, I'm still relevant. You can trust me. Just put a wall around me and I can't hurt you. So Figma XD came out in 2016. So they're new players 3 years ago. Prior to all of this, doing wireframing, doing, you know, what was called paper prototyping, you know, we would use whatever was handy. Some people, because a lot of this originates in the design sphere, you would see a lot of it done in Illustrator or even Photoshop. I remember pulling column templates for Photoshop that would let you go in and they would have like sticker layers and stuff you could pull from to start laying stuff out.
And use the guides, so sort of like the column layouts and everything. Yeah. Slice it up. Make slices. I remember that.
Prior to that, Word. Have you ever seen prototypes done in Word?
Like intentionally?
Yeah. I have worked with folks back, you know, going back 2006, 2007. Right. People were doing it in Word.
Wasn't there like a Word front page pipeline or something? Like you could export as a web page or something from a Word document?
Yeah, maybe. But screw that. This was just like people using the shapes tools.
Man, that's I think I've suppressed those memories.
It kind of also reminds me. I know there's like a very dedicated user base of folks who use like either PowerPoint or Apple Keynote for kind of like designing a prototype because of those kind of built-in inherent like animation and transition tools.
Yeah, you could use it to like do like a button click. So you click the button and it transitions to the next page. Yeah.
I have seen that. PowerPoint's nice. I've used PowerPoint for like ER diagrams and stuff. I mean, I've used Google Slides rather. I mean, it's nice to have something where you can just drag and drop everything all over the screen wherever you want.
And I mean, before all of that, pen and paper.
Yep.
And I mean, to this day,
that's still my preferred.
Yeah, there is still a lot to be said for getting up and grabbing a big old pad of paper, or I've got in my office here, I've mounted a big whiteboard to my right so that when I need to just sit down and think about something in space, that flow of hand to anything is really nice because it's free, right? You're not limited by anything. You're not concerned with transitions or padding or anything. You're just wanting to sketch a layout.
I find that it's easier for me to like create whatever it is I'm imagining if I'm using my hand to like move it on the paper than it is to do it with a mouse. In the same way that like I can type my thoughts more easily with my fingers than I can with my thumbs. You guess, is that just me?
No, that's totally just you. That's weird, man.
I mean, I think it's natural. Like we grew up learning how to draw and how to write, and these are some of the first things that we do as, you know, as humans. So I think it's just a testament to how fundamental something like pen and paper or paper and Sharpies or whatever it may be as like that starting point for just getting the ideas out there, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to show this to the guys on my end, but of course you can't see my camera, but I've got a little notebook in front of me right now that I've been working on a side project. And like the page one is me sketching.
Nice.
Ink on paper, a little interface, but this is the way we think, right? Because you can't just show up to an empty plot of land and make a house. You know, you have blueprints, you have design ideas, you know, you go through all kinds of iterations on everything from color to carpet and all of this. So this is our industry's way of saying, hey, let's not just start making something and hope the end result works. We want to start building something or, you know, outline something that then will inform that process. I personally have experience with Adobe XD, limited. I'm not deep into it, but I can use it. I generally like it. I think it's fairly effective. There are some things that I think would make it easier, but that's my stuff. I am with you, Aaron. I started using Balsamiq right around probably 08, 09. It was one of the first wireframing tools I used. And I used it specifically because I liked how, A, it had a, and we'll talk about some of this stuff later, but it was really easy to get into, and the styling of it made it easy to create things that I could show to people without them worrying about, like, how real it was.
I did like it for that. I used it for probably 6 months and then decided that I was just going to go back to using a legal pad and pen because I could do things faster on it.
And I know, Frank, you've got experience in several of these as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, some of my background was in graphic design. So being very familiar with Adobe tools like Illustrator and Photoshop, when I first started diving into the world of interface design, I would use those as my tools. But part of that was, you know, Illustrator and Photoshop specifically, these are massive, monumental tools with a whole, you know, a whole mega set of features that maybe aren't necessarily needed for kind of just iterating on some designs for an interface or what have you. So the speediness of them would kind of be interfered by the tools. Adobe definitely, you know, they did it right by kind of diving into the sphere and really focusing on XD. And, you know, I know their beta was more or less in 2016. I think they had like a formal release towards the end of 2017, but they really focus on providing a similar experience, a lot of the same shortcuts that like Adobe Power users would be good with, and really making this fast, quick, like really decreasing the time from like thought to design. I don't know what the exact phrasing that they use, but makes it really quick to iterate on. As far as Sketch and Envision, that's been one of my go-tos as well professionally. A lot of, they're very enterprise friendly. So using Sketch for designing the actual artboards and layouts and what have you for different UI designs, and then stringing them together in Envision.
These are the names. The names are easy. Envision, Sketch, Balsamiq, Figma, XD. There are many, many others. It's worth stopping for just a second to talk about what exactly they are. And I'm sure it's, for me, like this entire process, like the things that you create in these tools go by a whole lot of different names, whether that's wireframes or prototypes or mockups or high fidelity wireframes you'll hear sometimes. These are all tools to design things. Some of them are better than others, depending on the route you're going in terms of like how finished a thing you're going to design. But the idea is to kind of make something that establishes what I would say is the blueprint for then what you're going to build. And maybe that's super detailed. Maybe it's super engaging and everything, and you've already done user flows and interactions and all that in it. Or maybe it's just the skeleton, the outline to kind of show here's how we're going to use space or whatever. But that's at their heart. That's kind of what these tools are meant to sort of help you with. Is that a fair way for me to put that, Frank?
I'd say so. And granted, like a lot of these different outputs, you know, can exist at different points in the standard like design and development process. But these tools do facilitate the creation of these outputs, you know, by inherently just based on the functionality that's baked into them.
They are very good across the board. Like any of these tools you pick up can pretty much answer the form question. Like they can make a thing. They can, you know, give you the shape of something. Some of them in different ways, you know, XD does it, Envision does it, are good at also illustrating flow. So being able, you use the phrase, Frank, an art board. And those art boards are generally used to signify like different states of things. And so you can go from board to board to show when you click a button, here's the thing that happens, here's the pop-up you get. This is where we get into why we say UI, UX design tools, right? This is all about UI is the form and UX is the function kind of piece. So they're great at building out how it should look, how it'll lay out, how elements will butt up against each other, but these tools also help you facilitate how it will work in that space or what will happen in certain use cases. And that can be incredibly powerful for a team. How many, Frank, because obviously, you know, HubSpot is a huge company, right? Like in your team, the folks that you work with fairly directly, how big would you say that is?
Definitely as teams get bigger, being able to to iterate and like design something and be able to communicate the exact intention of what it is that you're trying to build and what is that functional experience and what ultimately someone out in the wild is going to be using is definitely a strength of some of these tools, and some more than others, sure. Like I know that's one thing that Adobe XD has been investing heavily in is on these kind of animation, you know, tools and functionality for prototypes and being able to simulate the experience that someone's going to have with it, to the point that now they've integrated a couple months, almost a year ago, the ability to simulate voice interactions. So if I'm looking at like one screen, what happens if I say a certain word or a certain phrase, and what does that what does that transition into? And I think they're one of the only ones who do that, but you know, the different tools offer different degrees of functionality to help people really just communicate and convey that intention.
I think one thing that I would say of all the different tools is the when you're the developer working directly with the client, like I remember I did this a lot in higher ed, pen and paper is fine because I'm talking directly with the stakeholder. So like I know what my notes mean, but at my last job, we used Envision because we had a dedicated like product design team. And so when they did a handoff, it would have, you know, the hex codes of all the colors. It had the exact pixel dimensions. It had the assets bundled in, like everything was all right there. And they were very intentional about like, okay, this needs to be this color. This needs to be this font. This needs to be this image, etc. So that was really useful. I like, it would be a lot harder if they gave me like, you know, so chicken scratch like I would make. So I think as your team gets bigger and as you need more specificity, like that's where those bigger tools become more useful.
Like you need something codified, right, to be able to hand for back sure. and forth over the fence.
Yeah.
Yeah, and definitely like Envision has their inspector tool, and like XD has I don't know if they call it inspect. I think they just call them like developer tools or something like that. But essentially communicating that same idea of like, what are the CSS, components and parameters, and what are the dimensions that I need to know for color, spacing, size, all that good stuff.
There's an article. And if you're interested in just the general discussion of, you know, UI versus UX, there's an article over at Career Foundry. You can go pick up. We'll have that linked in the show notes that digs into that at length. It's like a 16-minute article. So when we then start thinking about, okay, so there's all these tools. Which one do I use? You know, why would I pick, you know, Envision over XD or Balsamiq? You know, how do I even know where to start? And I think that that's a challenge, much like when I sit down and I think, well, do I use Vue or do I use Angular? You know, do I use PHP or React, or you know, there's all of these different things that you have to consider when you're building something. I think first and foremost, the very first piece of advice I'm going to give you is, as far as like the big ones, so these big five that we throw the names around, Envision, Sketch, Balsamiq, Figma, XD, like I feel like in general, you can't go too wrong with most of them.
For sure.
Like in a broad sense, you know, they're all good tools. They've all, XD really has come a long way. Refining their experience. I think Adobe had a fire lit under them when they saw like the money Envision and Sketch were making. And they said, well, we want a piece of that pie. And of course, they have the power of Creative Cloud to leverage there. So they really put some effort into that. But all of these tools are good. Some of them are good in different ways.
Like if the tools are effectively more or less interchangeable, would you say that the discretion comes in how you use them? Like there's a right and wrong way or a right and wrong purpose for using the tools?
I mean, potentially. The way I look at it, there's so many different options that you can come at it from different views. So like at one point, if you're really well-versed in all the different tools and you know exactly what you want to get out of them, then it becomes pretty easy to know like, okay, well, this is a certain feature and functionality that I want or need. And so I'll just go with that. And that's what makes sense for my team. But if you don't, then it comes down to a number of other factors, like, you know, price is certainly one of them. The size of your team, you know, the platform that it's available on. So like, for example, Sketch is a Mac only application, whereas I know like Envision and XD, they do have Windows and Mac versions available. So there's a number of different lenses that you can look at it to find what ultimately makes the most sense.
Hmm.
go over, if you want to find an interesting tool, it'll be linked in the show notes. It's over on Prototyper, and they've put together a little, it's a little chart with a bunch of, I think I counted almost 30 different interaction design tools. And you can filter it and change the way it's charted. So you can look at speed or affordability. You can look at, you know, what do you need? Are you looking for high fidelity, or are you looking for, you know, wireframing? Are you looking for something that's free, or are you looking for something that you can just pay for once? And it lets you chart these features against each other, which is just, it's a very interesting way. And I'll tell you straight up, I don't know how old this is. I don't know.
It's like, I had no idea there's so many tools.
Yeah, that's the same thing I said. I'm like, there are a lot of these things that I have never touched in my life.
What, 24 here? There's a lot. Oh, Marvel. Marvel's the one that I used at my last job.
Marvel?
That's got the handoff mode and everything. Yeah.
I'll talk a little bit about my experience here, and then, and same, Frank and Aaron, you guys, anything you want to throw in on this. I started with Balsamiq. It was super easy. Balsamiq is a very lightweight tool to get into. The learning curve on it is very shallow. As a consequence, it's not super detailed. You're not going to get a huge amount of interaction stuff out of it or anything. It is what I would call low fidelity. It's got a distinct art style included with it, which is like a fake, you know, chicken scratch.
It's all shades of gray, and then like they have it's like a light vermilion red accent color that you can use for certain things to kind of call attention to them.
The value for me was in that low fidelity, because like for me, I was an army of one when I was using it, so I was doing all the web stuff by myself. And when I would go to talk to people about something, a feature or something we were making for the website, it often made a lot of sense for me to show them something like this, because I didn't have to worry about them looking at it and thinking, because one of the challenges that you're going to run into with the higher fidelity options is sometimes you'll show it to a stakeholder and they'll think you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And that can invite a certain type of criticism or lack of criticism.
Yep.
With it, that is not always beneficial. So for me, that low fidelity concept worked really well, just to get spatial relationships down, because that's often how I would do it. Is I would go from something very rough, even hand drawn. If I went into Balsamiq, I'd get something similar just to get my general layout, and then I would go into an interactive prototype type system. Or I'd spin up something like Foundation or Bootstrap to kind of start doing some prototyping in the browser at that point. But this would get me started at least for that.
If you don't do something absolutely bare bones, then the stakeholder that you're talking to will 100% be like, oh, I don't like this color though. Or they'll focus on like the presentation layer and not the UI layer. So that was definitely one thing that was great about Balsamiq, was it was like really obvious, like, oh no, this is not what the site will look like.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, as we were talking about the different outputs of these tools, like really low fidelity, just kind of like basic rudimentary shapes and wireframes, that kind of thing is great to like solicit honest feedback, since people will think like, oh, well, this is rough, so it's still, you know, it's still okay to give my input, while also not being distracting to the point of like having all these colors and these different typefaces that, you know, someone like a stakeholder or anyone really can look at and be like, well, you know, they can question the value of it, when really we want to focus on, does everything look like it should, and can this work, and should this work the way that it does, and where are the gaps, like where does this break, like more functional.
Yeah,
there's also XD. I have experience with XD. One of the biggest selling points for me on Adobe XD is simply the fact that it's free. That's a huge, I think, selling point, especially for freelancers or somebody, you know, in school. Free is fantastic. Balsamiq's not free. Mm-hmm. Sketch isn't free. InVision isn't free. Figma, I think, has a free option. And I say that InVision and Sketch may have free options that have, you know, a sort of locked down option. Adobe XD, though, is like free as in beer. It's as long as you are paying for Adobe Cloud already.
Oh. Okay.
It's included. So like if you get the Photoshop plan, then you have Adobe XD. If you've got the photography plan, then you've got XD. Now you do have to be paying for a Creative Cloud plan otherwise, but at this point, that's such a common thing for if you do any kind of design already that it it's highly accessible from a tool standpoint. And it means you're getting an incredibly high quality tool for nothing. To me, that's a big deal. Like that's, like I say, Adobe said, we want to eat the lunch of our competitors, and they went at it in a major way. We brought this up on a real-time overview episode last year, but man, and it's, I like it. I've been using it. One thing I didn't like about it is the way it handles assets. So if you're trying to like import, for instance, material design, if you're doing something with material design, you can go download a material design kit. But just the way that process works is kind of strange, and I don't fully understand it because I just haven't used it enough yet. But it doesn't really open it like it's assets in your existing project. It's just another project, and you copy and paste out of it or something. Like, but it works. It absolutely gets the job done, which is probably the most important part of that.
Definitely. And I think that that's something that Adobe XD has been trying to come up on, is like really investing in this idea of assets and components and like shared libraries and pattern libraries, design systems, that kind of thing. And I think they're making headway into that, you know, into that space, you know, and I could be mistaken, but like it wasn't until very recently that they've made some meaningful and valuable updates for at least in that regard. And I mean, credit to them, like they put out updates almost monthly and they're constantly trying to improve it. And like just I think just this month they released a new update for different component states for different like interface elements. So if I have like a button, I can save in one document like the active version, what the hover state would look like, or what the disable state. And so they're really plugging along for kind of that ecosystem kind of vibe.
The thing that I think about when I think about Balsamic and XD, now both of them do have cloud components, which is to say you can make something and store it out there where somebody can go get it. But I would not...
On somebody else's computer.
I would not say that that is their strength, personally. Now, this may be coming from a place like I haven't used Balsamic in a couple years. XD, I said, my experience with it is limited, but you know, I've used it a little bit. I feel like they are certainly better for somebody who is maybe working on their own or isn't trying to collaborate heavily like with other designers. This is where I think Figma, Sketch, and Envision really step up. Their approach, especially at the enterprise level, to provide like a really collaborative environment and to create things that are meant to persist, like create artifacts of the work. So that's whether that's something that's going to go into a pattern library or a design system, something to go into a style guide that people will access. Those tools feel like they really have tried to get that part of the process on lock.
For sure. And I mean, I feel like that's one of Figma's strongest kind of value propositions. Like I view them like the Google Docs of designing. Like their collaborative tools are arguably some of the best. Sketch and Envision are good in that regard. And I think, you know, Envision, where if you create a design for an interface in Sketch and you export it out to Envision to string a number of these different screens together, like their collaborative tools for commenting and tagging people into them and soliciting and receiving feedback is super solid. But what I'll credit Envision to the most is their freehand tools, which is essentially pen and paper. It's just sketching and drawing really low fidelity. But that's a space where anybody can, you know, anybody on your team can all actively work on together. And like, that's, you know, in some of my times, that's been some of the best experiences I've had, is actively just being in there working with other designers, other engineers, and just everyone drawing and commenting and all in the same space live in real time. So like Envision and Figma, in my book, are probably the best for that.
And Figma, for what it's worth, does have a free plan if you're interested in trying that out, or seeing, you know, what you can get out of it. It's pretty limited, but you do get 3 projects out of it. They'll let you have a couple editors in there. It doesn't have like a ton of like shareable stuff or anything. It's definitely not good for a company who needs to share across a bunch of people. But to try it out, or if you're a solo designer that's trying to get into it, that's definitely, and I'm going to assume that that's probably true with Envision and Sketch as well. But Sketch's big thing, and Frank, you touched on this, is great if you use a Mac.
Yep.
Like that's the sort of the catch there, is that Sketch, as far as I know, it doesn't have a PC component to it yet. What else? Is there anything else that stands out to Aaron, you or Frank, as far as like why you might go after one of these tools versus another?
I mean, I know Sketch, one of the things that's like built Sketch's reputation is their kind of like their third-party integrations and their plugins for using Sketch. And that's something that XD recently kind of jumped into the fray, and I think they're doing well in. But like Sketch has a huge, huge library of just third-party plugins to do a number of different things, whether that's, you know, dummy text or name generators, all kinds of random things that you might want for your designs. And then as another plug for XD, like their animation tools are superb. So although I use Sketch and InVision primarily within my workplace, I definitely still default to XD if I need to communicate any kinds of like animations or visuals in that regard.
As a developer, I mean, like, I'm not ignorant on design, but I don't feel that I have honed the skills sufficiently to make educated decisions with the granularity that a tool like InVision or maybe even XD would offer. And so something like a balsamic or similar thing, PowerPoint or slides or just pen and paper, is going to be what I'm probably going to use.
Yeah, still. And that's fair.
Because that's the level that like I'm used to working at, and I would rather not make a decision about things like color or shape or other things because I don't care. That someone else can make that who is better at that stuff.
Yeah.
So the tool that I want is the one that's going to be the closest to that level of fidelity for me.
And there is also a tool similar to the chart that we mentioned from Prototyper. It's over at uxtools.co. And again, link in the show notes. That gives a little bit of a like a side-by-side apples-to-apples feature comparison across a lot of these. And that might also be something that will be useful to you if you're looking into these different tools or, you know, trying to figure out, you know, well, is, you know, does it have cloud options? Does it have Windows support? You know, how do the prices compare? So there's a lot of those, but also the same thing, like you guys have mentioned, are there collaboration tools? Are there handoff features and things like that as well? So they've got quite a few things in there, and they mark off, you know, where some of these tools kind of shine, where they compete with each other, and also like how they're used, like what their usage numbers are. So that may be another good place to start if you need to look at like what, you know, what is it that's going to be right for me. For these five, Balsamic doesn't count. So these four, because Balsamic is lo-fi already. But if you are doing something where, say, you use Foundation or you use Material Design, or you're using like an established design system of some kind, maybe you're using the U.S. Government design standard system, go out and research whether or not the tool already has like built-in support for that. Because that could make a difference as well if you're having to reproduce that look and feel. Or like with XD, one thing that's nice about XD is you can just go to Adobe's website and they've got a gallery of all of these different design pattern libraries. You download the one you need and you can open it up to bring all of their artifacts and patterns right into your design already. Also on output, we mentioned output right earlier, and most of them will do things like a PDF or an image. Balsamic, that's pretty much what they deal in exclusively. Mm. But you may be thinking bigger than that. And this is, Frank, you mentioned with Figma, you know, one of Figma's big strengths is like taking all of these things. And I like this phrase, you know, artifacts, the things that you create, mm-hmm. basically. And they are designed to give life to those options beyond just the thing you're building. So if you work at a company and you're going to have buttons in this particular application, but you're going to be building something in a month that's also going to need buttons, some of these tools can help with establishing that baseline pattern library and save it and make it accessible so that in your next project you can import that in. That's one thing I know Figma is like, they've really been kind of driving home with that, and that can be something to really look at. I want to talk just for a second about like where these all fit in, because it is design, and we'd normally think, well, you design it, then you go build it, which is a very waterfall way of thinking about it, and is a very bad way of thinking about it, quite frankly.
Yep.
I mean, one of the things that we always talk about, iteration, development has this word we love to use incorrectly all the time called agile. And because it's all about iteration, right? It's all about doing the thing and then doing the thing a little differently or a little better or doing it a little newer.
Well, doing it in response to stakeholder feedback. That's that's the important part that I think often gets lost.
We're always talking iteration, but UX works the exact same way. One of the things that I like to think about is I think Balsamiq has a set place fairly early in the process. But a tool like Figma, its role is actually throughout your design process and throughout your iteration process, because it's meant to help you start, but it's also meant to help you refine, and it's meant to help you improve. Where, Frank, when you guys are, you know, working on the next new feature that you've got, how often do you find yourself referring back to these tools while something is being built?
All the time. I mean, I feel like I use them all throughout, short of, let's say, if there's a particular problem that, you know, the business wants us to solve, and we do our fair amount of research and, you know, speaking to users and getting a sense of, like, are we solving the right problem with whatever it is that we're going to design and build? But once we understand that space, then I'd say is where I start to live in the tool kind of in and out. So as I'm, you know, doing early sketches that are super low fidelity, as I'm putting together wireframes that are slightly higher fidelity and soliciting feedback and, you know, understanding the feasibility of these designs, and even to the point where once they are high fidelity and we're working on that handoff and that transition to engineers and to developers, constantly there's going to be times where questions may come up and we need to go back to the tool to either refer to the designs or even make adjustments as we run into constraints and problems. Because naturally, you're not going to be able to think of every single, you know, edge case and every single potential path that can happen or any problem or challenge that you're going to run into. So these tools really come in handy to have something to refer back to and to allow you to make adjustments at the speed of thought as you're needed and as you're working with your engineers. And it's a constant iterative cycle where you're going back and forth.
There's a absolutely worthless mnemonic device. Comes from an article over at uxplanet.org. Again, linked in the show notes. They did not actually have this as a mnemonic device, but it was there, and so I said it. And it's called ERSDI. Understand, research, sketch, design, implement, and evaluate. And so it's this iterative process of coming up with what you need, figuring out what do you need to get there, figuring out what does that thing look like, figuring out how is it going to actually work in space, then figuring out did it do the thing that I set out in the first step, and then starting all that over again. And this is where these tools start to come into play, because you're going to keep adjusting and changing because you do walk through these steps. You start with, you know, the most basic ideas of what it is you want something to look like. Even as a designer, it doesn't matter if you're not a you're not a UX designer or a UI designer, because these things do factor into the work that you do, and understanding this process is what part of what makes them useful. It also, I think more than anything, establishes your baseline for any and all testing. The importance that user testing has on everything from design to content to colors to anything. And so by having some of these tools in place, it actually allows you to do tests more frequently and earlier in the process, because you'll have something somebody can look at very early. That, to me, is part of what makes all of this worth its weight in gold. We can say, hey, let's go build a search, and here's our, we're going to slap a form up there, and we're going to slap some results down below it and all of this, and we're just going to make it. But that doesn't mean you've made something useful. It doesn't mean you've made something intuitive.
If I had to condense Krug's body of work down into one sentence, it would be test early and often.
it ultimately comes down to just like, you have, if you're designing and building products for people, like, you need to get that validation and feedback, and whether it's early in the process with wireframes and something low fidelity, just to get at like oh, is this usable? Or to the point where it's even higher fidelity and it's maybe even a fully functional prototype, and you could still try to find those gaps in understanding. Because more often than not, we tend to be wrong in our assumptions about human behavior.
Yeah, and that's one reason why, like, if you think about this, if you want to put this into, like, another universe, so to speak, if you've ever heard about, like, doing audience tests with early movies, movies do this all the time, and they don't have a finished movie when they do these screenings. This is before the movie comes out to figure out how it's doing. And so they frequently go into these sessions without scores composed for it, without visual effects finished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes without shots even completed. Like, they will have card holder or placeholders in place of dialogue and stuff. But it's with the whole goal of getting feedback from the audience to figure out, are the beats right?
I just like imagining, like, a scene, and it's like the good guy and the bad guy running at each other, and then it's just the black screen with white text that says, cool fight scene.
That is exactly how it happens. That is
very silent.
That
film.
Is precisely the way sometimes that goes down. This is the web development version of that. You take that balsamic, lo-fi, super sketchy looking prototype to figure out, hey, if I ask you, where do your eyes go when I say search for something? And you're like, oh,
my eyes
it goes to the
here.
Search box. You know, or, oh, it goes to the thing that you have labeled giant ad, you know, like something like that. So having this process lets you do that. You can start early. Then as you add fidelity to it, as you add details, as you add interactivity, you can continue that process and ask more detailed questions, more specific questions. You can give them goals to accomplish.
I did UX testing one time, or rather I did usability testing, by drawing the website on paper with pen.
It's perfect.
And then having like 10 or 20 different pages of this, and then just putting it in front of someone and then like swapping them out. It works.
Paper prototyping is a real thing.
Yeah, you can get like legitimately useful feedback just even doing that much. So
let's take this process, right? Where as we talk about that iterative process, the whole point of this is that you design something that then gets actually built into a tool. And just to be clear, none of this devalues like interactive prototyping, what we think of as I'm going to go in and very quickly write some HTML. I'm going to throw a foundation up so we can just do buttons and forms and, you know, a content section, and we're going to throw up, you know, Phil Murray images and all of that. Like, that, you can still do all that. Like, that kind of interactive prototyping is also just as valid. Yep. It's just that that's generally free and just something you can do. It's not a tool, so we didn't talk about it. But it is still important. And one thing, and this goes back to point four, it goes back to point five, the way we consider these tools and figure out which one is right for us sometimes can be a matter of, how does it output stuff so that the developer can then take it and go build those things?
Mm.
So like you had mentioned, Frank, right? Some of these tools will give you an inspector so that you can click that button and get the exact amount of padding that's there. Because, I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I've had to go into Photoshop files with the measuring tool to figure out the scales that people were using on different things.
I think it gets back to that thing I mentioned earlier about specificity. You know, if I'm doing a paper pen thing, there's no specificity there. It's like, this page has a button. It's on the right side. And that's pretty much all I need to know. But like, if it's like a really, like if you're doing like a really well-composed site with fancy animations and like pixel perfect placement and everything else, you got to have that granularity.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned Aaron, you know, like when it comes to animations, and I feel like I'm shouting them out a lot. I promise I'm not paid by Adobe, but one of the things that I do appreciate and why I go to XD for animations is because when you string together a number of different like screens for a prototype and you have these complex animations, you can actually preview and record it as a video. And so I can give these videos to, you know, it's MP4, I think. to mm-hmm. engineers to like really convey, all right, this is the expectation of like the speed and the duration of some of these like micro animations. And it like that level of granularity really comes in handy. And, you know, each tool does their own thing in that with that kind of specificity. But it's huge.
Developers love specs.
Yeah.
We love knowing exactly what you want. There are so many times in design, especially where you're handed something and every intent is not always there. You know, if there's white space around something, you can't always be certain if that's a design decision or just a consequence of the space that was available on the page, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to look in some of these tools and see those refined points of information can really help make it easier on the developer. I also think, as a consequence, using these tools makes designers better.
Yeah.
You know, I remember for years, you could hire an outside design firm. That's all they did. They didn't do development. They only did design, and they would send you your Photoshop files and be like, here you go. Here's your website mm-hmm. theme. And you would look at it and be like, I can't build this. At least, you know, 10, 15 years ago with, you know, the CSS we had and things like that. Like, there was just...
Right.
They would layer things or they would do drop shadows. And so these kind of tools give, I think, designers the context of development without asking them to be a developer.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
this is part of cross-pollination on teams. It's why it's important to know how marketing teams talk. It's why it's important to know how DevOps teams talk. You don't have to be fluent. But I think the baseline understanding is incredibly powerful to making a team work really well together, making a developer, you know, somebody who can read a design just as much as a designer who can build something that can be coded easily. Or mm-hmm. one of my favorites is like the variation on patterns. One mm-hmm. button is 10 pixels tall. Another button is 12 pixels tall. Another one's 20 pixels tall, but has bold text inside of it. And it's like there are variations on patterns, but it's not made clear if it's intentional, especially when it's minor. 10 pixels, 12 pixels. These kinds of tools, I think, help answer those exact questions and keep everybody kind of on that same page.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's, you know, like these tools helping to make designers better and like making that transition from design to development better and easier. As we think about these tools and how they facilitate the idea of pattern libraries and design systems, and that's an entire other conversation as far as, you know, like the value of these kinds of things and design systems. But it's so easy to design something and like duplicate a number of artboards or your screens and have your make changes to your buttons. And now all of a sudden, you know, next thing you know, you have 10 different shades of gray or, you know, however many numbers of buttons. And these kinds of like design systems allow you to save the time that you have, not only make the work and make it easier for the developers to understand what your intention is and what the ultimate source of truth is, but really allow you to save time by creating one component with certain number of variations and just keep that consistent. If I make a change to like the main kind of source file, then that'll be updated across all the other uses of that button. So like that's something else that definitely helps make designers and developers better and that working relationship better.
And the last I think big value add there is those kinds of things, that kind of output when it comes to getting third parties involved in your work, because whether mm-hmm. you're a freelancer mm-hmm. or you work at a company, inevitably you're gonna have to work with somebody else. And so having something that you can hand off and say, here's our design system, here's our pattern library, here's whatever it is that you're after, that gets them up to speed much quicker. There we go. I got there. much quicker. Okay, final question. Your money's on the table. You can buy exactly one of these tools for the rest of your life, and it's the one you have to use. Which one is it? Aaron?
What? Just like a desert island question, but with UX design tools.
Which UX design tool are you going to buy?
I would pick Balsamiq, but inside of Balsamiq, there would be a set of matches, a compass,
okay,
and a mirror.
That's a fair answer. Frank, what's your money on?
I mean, pretty predictable, but I'm going to say XD.
I am going to agree with Frank. I'm going to put my no money behind XD. Folks, let us know what your application of choice is, what your experience has been. Have you used these? Are you using one of the, you know, 20 others that are out there and you find one of them to be particularly useful? Let us know. We'd love to hear and know what the pros and cons are, or if you think, you know, we weren't fair to any of these. I feel like we were pretty nice to all of them, though. So, sorry, none of us apparently use Sketch, so there wasn't a whole lot to talk about there except that it's for Macs. So,
I don't have a Mac.
But that is a fair criticism unto itself. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute, and we'll talk to Frank, and we'll talk about the rest of our season.
The Drunken UX Podcast is brought to you by our friends at NewCloud. NewCloud is an industry-leading interactive map provider who has been building location-based solutions for organizations for a decade. Are you trying to find a simple solution to provide your users with an interactive map of your school, city, or business? Well, NewCloud's interactive map platform gives you the power to make and edit a custom interactive map in just minutes. They have a team of professional cartographers who specialize in map illustrations of many different styles and are ready to design an artistic rendering to fit your exact needs. One map serves all of your users' devices with responsive maps that are designed to scale and blend in seamlessly with your existing website. To request a demonstration or to view their portfolio, visit them online at newcloud.com/drunkenux. That's nucloud.com/drunkenux.
Frank, thanks for taking the time tonight to sit down with us. We appreciate you giving us a little chunk of your evening to talk about these tools. I hope that everybody found it useful and that you've learned a little bit and that you'll go out there and kind of do some research of your own. But Frank, the floor is yours. The microphone is in front of you. Take a couple minutes. Tell everybody where they can find you, where they can interact with you, anything you got going on or anything you want them to know.
For sure. And I mean, first off, thanks, Michael and Aaron, for having me on the show, especially for what I believe is episode 50, which is, you know, kind of a big deal. And I remember following the show, especially in its early stages. So it's kind of exciting to be on here.
It's really crazy.
If I may add for your listeners, I think one thing I would just love to call out, there's all these kinds of tools, but always remember, the tool doesn't make the designer. The designer makes the tools. You can make any one of these tools or even pen and paper work. Just find what's best for you to reaffirm Michael's message and make it happen. As far as where you can find me, I'm on LinkedIn, Frank Romeo, R-O-M-E-U is my last name. On Medium, I'll occasionally post some articles, _ R-O-M-E-U-X. It's like my last name, X. It's kind of cute, but you know, whatever.
Nice.
And then on Instagram, so I do, as Michael had mentioned earlier, I'm creative director of design company, Vinylized Design Company. And then our Instagram is Vinylized Design. We focus on a number of different like design and branding solutions. And then there's some other projects that are coming up in the horizon, but I'm going to keep those under wraps for now. But be on the lookout on my Medium page and on LinkedIn for more from that. And Twitter as well, R-O-M-E-U-X.
Nice. Well, thank you all for listening this evening to this amazing discussion. I'm terrible at this, Michael.
How's that Lagavulin doing?
The Lagavulin's great. I'm just, I don't have the radio.
I set him up. You're supposed to knock him down. That's the way this works.
I'll knock him down by running.
Folks, two more episodes left. I think I said two more episodes last time, but I forgot that we have three then, two now. We have one more interview coming up for you in 2 weeks, and then we will round out the season by giving you an update from topics from our three top episodes over the first two seasons. So hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook. Let us know what you think those episodes are going to be. I already know, but I'm not going to tell you. It's going to be a surprise. Let's see. If you want to check us out, Twitter, Facebook, /DrunkenUX. You can go on Instagram at /DrunkenUXPodcast. If you want to chat with us, talk to us about design tools and let us know what it is you like, you can come over by Slack at drunkenux.com/slack. You know, the thing about all these tools, make sure you know what your needs are, what problems you're trying to solve with them. Make sure that you pick the thing that is right for the way that you work. That's one of the most important things about this. I said at the start, most of these tools, they're not bad. There's not like you can't go wrong with any of them, but you can go with something that maybe doesn't facilitate the way you work. So make sure You consider that before you jump in with anything. Try some of those free trials. Keep all of this kind of advice close to you and make sure that you always remember to keep your personas close. And your users closer.
I love it when I notice, like, oh, there it is.
Bye-bye. I see you.